Recorded Books presents An Unabridged Recording of the Sisters Grimm, Book 6, by Michael Buckley.
Sabrina had never felt as confident as she did at that moment. For the first time in a long time, she wasn't worried about monsters, villains, or lunatics. She didn't fear surprise attacks or betrayal by people she trusted. In fact, she was eager for a confrontation. Let one of the Scarlet Hands thugs try something and she would crush them into dust. Her body was strong. Her blood was hungry. She was a wrecking machine. She wanted to tell her sister how she felt. If only she could make Daphne understand that what was happening was a good thing. But the words were hard to find. Her thoughts were cloudy and complicated. It didn't help that everyone was shouting, and the room was filled with strong winds. Sabrina turned to Daphne. The little girl was undergoing her own transformation. A swirling black fog circled her body, blocking out most of her face. All Sabrina could see were her eyes, like two brilliant suns illuminating dark corners and obliterating shadows.
"Sabrina, you have to stop this!" Granny Relda cried.
Sabrina was confused. What did her grandmother mean? She wasn't doing anything wrong.
"You have to fight this!"
Daphne said from behind the black fog.
"I know you are still in there! Don't let him control you!"
"Why are you talking to me like this?" Sabrina asked. When no one replied, she realized her words were only in her head.
"Fight him, child," a voice said from below.
Sabrina glanced down. Mr. Canis lay at her feet, old and withered, his body trapped in the clutches of a huge, fur-covered paw. It was squeezing the life from the old man's chest. She cried out, hoping someone would help her pull her friend from the monster's terrible grip. But her pleas ceased when she realized the claws that were killing Mr. Canis were her own. Chapter 1. 5 days earlier. Sabrina Grimm awoke with a crazy dream fresh in her mind. In it, she was walking along a stone path when she realized she was naked. She screamed and rushed to some bushes to hide herself, wondering how she could have left the house without remembering to get dressed. A moment later, the worst possible person came along, Puck. Since she had little alternative, she begged him to bring her clothes. He flew off and quickly returned with a pair of jeans, a shirt, and sneakers, which he left by the bushes so she could dress in private. Then, surprisingly, he walked away without a single smart-aleck comment. Relieved, she put the clothing on and continued on her way, only to find people pointing at her and staring. She looked down and found she was naked again. Puck appeared once more. He told her that clothes couldn't hide who she really was. That's when she woke up angry and embarrassed. Even in her dreams, Puck was a pain. She lay in bed, enjoying the cool breeze drifting through her bedroom window. The model airplanes hanging from the ceiling swayed back and forth. She watched them for a while, imagining her father building them when he was her age. He had put a lot of effort into the models. They were painted, glued, and assembled perfectly. Her father was meticulous. Her little sister, Daphne, lay asleep beside her, breathing softly into her pillow. Sabrina glanced over at the alarm clock that sat on a night table next to her bed. 3 a.m. It was a good time, she thought. There were no emergencies to deal with, no impending chaos, no responsibilities, and best of all, no prying eyes. She climbed out of bed, rushed to the desk sitting in the corner of the room, and opened the drawer. Tucked in the back was a little black bag. She snatched it up and tiptoed into the hallway. Once she was in the bathroom, she flipped on the light and closed the door. It was nice for once to have the bathroom to herself. There were a lot of people living in the big old house, in addition to Sabrina and Daphne, Uncle Jake, Granny Relda, Puck, and, of course, Elvis, the family dog, who often used the toilet as a drinking fountain. And they all shared one tiny bathroom. The line was long and privacy was in short supply. Sabrina unzipped the little black bag, revealing a personal treasure trove of makeup. Tubes of lipstick and lip gloss, eyeshadow, mascara, blush, and foundation, as well as a variety of barrettes she had purchased with her allowance at a local drugstore. She dug her hands into the bag and went to work. First, she tried to apply the foundation, but it made her look like a ghost. Then she accidentally put on too much blush, giving her a look of perpetual embarrassment. The mascara was thick and gloppy, and combined with the eyeliner, it made her look like an angry raccoon. The lipstick was fire engine red. When she was finished, she studied herself in the mirror and nearly cried. She looked like the Joker from a stack of playing cards. She was hideous, and worse, hopeless. She would never learn to use this stuff. Frustrated, she washed it all off. It was times like this when Sabrina especially missed her mother. Lately, Sabrina's appearance had become more and more important to her. Though she didn't fully understand the changes she was going through, she knew they had something to do with growing up. It seemed like yesterday when she couldn't have cared less about what she looked like. But now she spent hours contemplating hairstyles. She gave serious consideration to whether her shoes matched her tops. It seemed as if all she could think about was how others might see her, and she hated herself for it. She had always detested girly girls with their little dresses and hair and ribbons. They were so stupid and superficial. Unfortunately, she could feel herself becoming one of those girls. Each time she applied her lip gloss, she imagined another fleet of brain cells dying a horrible death. Luckily, no one in her family had noticed her preoccupation with vanity. Most importantly, Puck. If he discovered she was visiting the bathroom in the middle of the night to primp and study her flaws, he would make fun of her until she was old and gray. Abandoning her beauty regimen for the night, she washed her face and was about to shut off the light and go back to bed when she heard something bubbling in the toilet. The lid was down, and she couldn't see what was causing the noise, but she had her suspicions. Before Puck moved in with the family, he had lived in the woods for a decade. So modern conveniences mesmerized him, none more so than the toilet. He loved to flush it over and over and watch the water swirl down the hole and disappear. For months, he was convinced that toilets were some kind of magic, until Uncle Jake explained how indoor plumbing worked. Unfortunately, this knowledge only increased Puck's interest, and it wasn't long before he was conducting what he called scientific research to discover what could be flushed down the tubes. It started out with a little loose change, but the items quickly grew in size. Marbles, wristwatches, doorknobs, balls of yarn, even scoops of butter pecan ice cream swirled and disappeared. Granny finally put an end to it all when she caught Puck trying to flush a beaver he had trapped by the river. Ever since, the toilet had been coughing up Puck's experiments. Last week, Sabrina found one of her mittens inside. Now, apparently, something else was making its way to the surface. She bent down and lifted the lid, hoping it was the missing television remote control, which had vanished months ago. But it wasn't the remote control. Instead, it was something so shocking she would have nightmares about it the rest of her life, and an unnatural fear of toilets in general. Who would expect to lift the toilet lid and find a little man sitting inside? "Who goes there?" he said in a squeaky voice. He was no more than a foot tall and wore a tiny green suit, a green bowler hat, and shiny black shoes with bright brass buckles. His long red beard dipped into the toilet water. Sabrina shrieked and slammed the toilet lid down on the creature's head. The little man groaned and shouted a few angry curses, but Sabrina didn't stick around to hear them. She was already running down the hallway, screaming for her grandmother. Granny Relda stumbled out of her room. She was wearing an ankle-length nightgown and a sleeping cap that hid her gray hair. She looked the picture of the perfect grandmother, except, of course, for the sharpened battle axe she held in her hand. "Liebling!" her grandmother cried in a light German accent. Liebling was the German word for sweetheart.
"What is going on?"
"There's a person in the toilet," Sabrina said.
That?
Before she could answer, Uncle Jake came out of a room at the end of the hall. He was fully dressed in jeans, leather boots, and a long overcoat with hundreds of little pockets sewn into it. He looked exhausted and in dire need of a shave.
What's all the hubbub about?
Sabrina says she saw something in the toilet, Granny Relda explained.
I swear I flushed, Uncle Jake said as he threw up his hands.
Not that! A person! Sabrina shouted. He spoke to me!
Mom, you've really got to cut back on all the spicy food you've been feeding the girls, Uncle Jake said. It's giving them bad dreams.
It wasn't a dream, Sabrina cried.
Daphne entered the hallway, dragging her blanket behind her. She rubbed the sleep from her eyes with her free hand and looked around grumpily.
Can't a person get some shut-eye around here?
Sabrina had a bad dream, Granny Relda explained.
I did not!
She says she saw something in the toilet, Uncle Jake said.
I swear I flushed, Daphne said.
Ugh, I'll show you, Sabrina said, as she pulled her grandmother into the bathroom. She pointed at the toilet, then took a step back.
It's in there.
Granny set her battle axe on the floor and smiled.
Honestly, Sabrina, I think you're a little old to be scared of the boogeyman.
The old woman lifted the toilet lid. There was the little man, rubbing a red knot on the top of his head and glaring at the crowd.
What's the big idea? He growled.
Startled, Granny slammed the lid down just as Sabrina had done. Sabrina, Daphne, and even Uncle Jake cried out in fright and backed out of the bathroom.
Now do you believe me? Sabrina said.
Oh, my, Granny cried. I'll never doubt you again.
What should we do, Mom? Uncle Jake asked the old woman.
Elvis!
Granny Relda shouted. Seconds later, an enormous blur of brown fur barreled up the stairs, knocking a few pictures off the wall as it stampeded into the bathroom and came to a screeching halt. Only then could Sabrina see him properly. Elvis, the family's 200-pound Great Dane. He barked at the toilet fiercely, snarling and snapping at the lid.
Get him, boy,
Daphne ordered.
You better surrender, Uncle Jake shouted at the toilet. Our dog is very hungry.
Just then, another door opened down the hall, and a shaggy-haired boy in cloud-covered pajamas stepped into the hallway. He scratched his armpit and let out a tremendous belch.
What's all the racket out here?
There's something horrible in the toilet, Daphne shouted.
Yeah, I think I forgot to flush, Puck said.
Not that, a little man, Granny Rilda said.
Oh, Puck said. That's just Seamus.
And who is Seamus?
Sabrina demanded.
He's part of your new security detail. Now that Mr. Canis is in jail, the house needs looking after. And to be honest, I'm too busy to do it myself. So I hired you all a team of bodyguards.
Why is he in the toilet? Uncle Jake pressed.
Well, duh. He's guarding it, of course.
Whatever for?
Granny asked.
The toilet is a vulnerable entrance into this house, Puck explained. Anything could crawl up the pipes and take a bite out of your...
We get the idea, Granny Relda interrupted. What are we going to do when we need to use it?
Seamus takes regular breaks and has lunch every day at noon, Puck said.
This is ridiculous, Sabrina said. We don't need bodyguards. And we don't need you to put some freak in the toilet.
Puck frowned.
You should really watch who you're calling a freak. He's a leprechaun.
Seamus lifted the lid and crawled out of the toilet. He now had two purple lumps on his head and an angry look in his eyes.
I didn't sign on for this abuse, Puck. I quit.
Quit?
You can't quit, Puck said. Who will I get to replace you?
Go find a toilet elf. What do I care?
The leprechaun shouted as he stomped down the hall and between the legs of Uncle Jake, leaving a trail of little wet footprints behind him. Puck frowned and turned back to Sabrina.
Now look what you've done. You've made Seamus quit. Do you know how hard it is to find someone to sit in a toilet all night?
How many more leprechauns are in the house?
Daphne asked, peering behind the shower curtain.
That was the only one,
Puck said.
Good, Sabrina said, relieved.
But there's about a dozen trolls, some goblins, a few elves and brownies, and a chupacabra staking out the other vulnerable areas of the house.
Sabrina gasped.
There are freaks all over the house? Again, freak is a really ugly term. It highlights how ignorant you are. This is the 21st century, you know,
Puck replied. Sabrina clenched her fist.
I'm going to highlight your mouth, pal. Give it your best shot,
Puck shouted.
Wait a minute. What's that on your lips?
Sabrina quickly wiped her mouth on her sleeve, leaving a lipstick stain on her shirt. She quietly cursed herself for not washing well.
Nothing, she said sheepishly. Puck, we appreciate you looking after us, Granny said, stepping between Sabrina and Puck. I know Mr. Canis would feel better knowing you are taking over his duties. I guess it can't hurt to have a security detail around the house, but perhaps the bathroom might be the one place we don't need an extra set of eyes.
Suit yourself, but if a dragon crawls up the pipes and toasts your rear ends, don't come crying to me,
Puck said with a snort and headed back to his room. Daphne peered into the toilet.
Could a dragon really fit in here?
Granny Relda assured the little girl that her rear end was safe from dragon attacks. She praised Elvis for his bravery and scratched him behind his big ears, then encouraged everyone to go back to bed.
We're going to visit Mr. Canis bright and early tomorrow, she reminded them.
Another wasted trip, Sabrina thought to herself. Granny, with Elvis trotting behind her, returned to her room, leaving Sabrina and Daphne alone with their uncle.
Have you been up all night?
Daphne asked him. Uncle Jake rubbed his bloodshot eyes.
Want to see where she is?
Absolutely,
Sabrina replied. The girls followed him back down the hall to the door to the spare bedroom. The room was sparsely furnished, with only a full-length mirror against the far wall and a queen-size bed in the middle. Lying on the bed were Henry and Veronica Grimm, Sabrina and Daphne's parents, who were currently the victims of a spell that kept them sound asleep. Nothing Sabrina and her family had tried could wake them up. They were like two sleeping beauties. Only one of them needed a shave. Recently, there had been a glimmer of hope for the sleeping Grimms, a woman from Henry's past who might be able to right the family's tragedy. Uncle Jake had been keeping a close watch on her via one of the Grimms' most valuable magical possessions, a magic mirror. Mirror wasn't exactly the best word to describe what it was. Mirrors reflect back what is in front of them. But this mirror was reflecting something else, or rather, somewhere else. Gazing into the silvery surface, Sabrina saw a beautiful curly-haired woman with a round face and green eyes. She had a splash of freckles on her button nose, and her blonde hair looked like precious gold against the bright blue sky. She was wearing a billowy white dress and sitting atop a camel. There were other people with her, each also on a camel, and they were snapping pictures of an ancient pyramid standing in a rocky desert.
Goldilocks, Sabrina whispered to herself.
It looks hot, Daphne said, as she peered into the mirror.
I think she's somewhere in Egypt. It's hard to tell exactly where, though. The place is overrun with pyramids,
Uncle Jake said as he knocked on the edge of the mirror.
If this thing had sound, I might be able to make out her tour guide's dialect.
Last week she was in the Serengeti. The week before, South Africa. Why does she keep moving around so much?
Daphne said. Who knows, Sabrina complained. She's never in one place more than a few days, and then she's jetting off somewhere completely different.
How are we going to get a message to her? She's got to come back here. She's got to help us wake up Mom and Dad.
Daphne and Uncle Jake seemed taken aback by Sabrina's sudden temper, but she felt she had a right to be angry. At one time, their search to find a way to break the spell on her parents had seemed hopeless. Now that they knew this woman had the solution, it was almost harder than before, as they had to watch her dart around the world on a silly vacation. "Be patient, Brina," Uncle Jake said to calm her. "We'll track her down." As if on cue, the image faded in the mirror, and in its place a fierce, bulbous head appeared floating in the silver surface. He had strong features and thick lips, and his eyes were as black as midnight. "Hello, Mirror," Sabrina said.
"Hello, girls," Mirror said. "Could the two of you drag your uncle out of here? He's been lurking around this room for 2 weeks. He needs something to eat, and if you ask me, he's long overdue for a bath."
"He's right," Daphne said to her uncle. "No offense, but you are getting a little rank."
Uncle Jake shrugged and threw up his hands in surrender.
"Fine, I can start up again in the morning."
"After a bath," Mira repeated.
Uncle Jake turned to the girls. "You two should run off to bed as well. You've got a big day tomorrow."
"More sitting outside the jail, hoping they will let us in to see Mr. Canis," Sabrina muttered. "It's a waste of time. Sheriff Nottingham won't let us in. We could be using the time to find Goldilocks."
"You may not see Canis, but I'm sure he appreciates the effort, Sabrina. What if you gave up on the day Nottingham had a change of heart?"
"You have to have a heart to change it," Sabrina grumbled.
"Are you coming with us?"
Daphne asked her uncle.
"Not this time, Peanut. I've got plans with Briar Rose."
"Another day of holding hands and smooching?"
Daphne asked.
Uncle Jake smiled. "If I play my cards right."
Breakfast was never a pleasant experience for Sabrina. Granny Relda's cooking left a lot to be desired. Many of her signature dishes included roots and grubs, flowers and weeds, milk from unusual animals, and tree bark, all in heavy, bubbling sauces. But that morning her appetite was ruined, not by her grandmother's culinary disasters, but by a pig-snouted creature sitting on the table like an ugly centerpiece. It had beady red eyes, enormous blisters all over its face, and a long blue forked tail it used to swat the flies that circled its melon-shaped head.
"I suppose you're part of the security team?"
Sabrina said to the creature. It nodded and puffed up its chest proudly.
"I'm a poison sniffer, I am. My job's to sniff out anything that might kill you before you put it in your gob, if it pleases you, miss."
"My gob?
Your pie hole, your chowder box, your mouth,"
it said as it wiped its runny nose on its hairy arm.
"I'm going to take a snort of every bite. Puck's orders."
"Lovely,"
Sabrina said sarcastically. Granny rushed into the room, carrying a sizzling pan and a spatula. She flipped something that looked like a pink burrito onto Sabrina's plate.
"What is this?"
Sabrina asked as she poked at her breakfast. She was sure that if she poked hard enough, it would squeal.
"It's gristle and ham wrapped around heavy whipping cream. People love this in the Czech Republic,"
Granny said as she rushed back into the kitchen. "People must be very unhappy in the Czech Republic if this is what they love to eat," Sabrina said. She leaned over to smell her breakfast, then eyed the ugly creature.
"I'll give you $5 if you tell my grandmother this is poisoned."
The creature shook its head.
"I cannot be bought."
Granny rushed back into the room with a pitcher and poured some glowing red juice into Sabrina's glass.
"Your sister has something planned for all of us,"
the old woman said, gesturing at Daphne's empty chair.
"She told me that today she is going to be a totally different person."
"She's going to start eating with a fork?" Sabrina asked.
"Don't tease her. She's got it into her head that she needs to grow up. When she comes down, try to treat her like an adult,"
the widow said. Sabrina cocked an eyebrow.
"You're kidding me, right?"
Just then, Daphne stepped into the room. Sabrina turned to face her and nearly fell out of her chair. Gone were the goofy t-shirts covered with puppets and cartoons, the blue jean overalls, the mismatched socks. Daphne was wearing a blue dress Granny had bought Sabrina for special occasions. Her hair was combed straight, rather than in her usual ratty pigtails, exactly the way Sabrina wore her own hair. Plus, the little girl was wearing lip gloss. She sat at the table, placed her napkin in her lap, and nodded at her sister and grandmother.
I hope everyone slept well.
It was several moments before Sabrina realized her jaw was hanging open. Is this some kind of joke? She cried. Daphne frowned, as did Granny Relda.
Does it look like a joke?
Daphne snapped, then did something that made Sabrina's blood boil. Daphne turned to her grandmother and rolled her eyes impatiently. How dare she?
So, I hear we have some appointments this morning, Grandmother, Daphne said.
Granny chuckled but managed not to burst into laughter.
Yes, indeed. I need the two of you to hurry this breakfast. We're going downtown.
How?
Daphne said.
Uncle Jacob is spending the day with Briar.
Good question. We all know it's a federal offense for you to get behind the wheel of a car, Sabrina said to her grandmother. And if you think we're getting into Rip Van Winkle's cab again, you've lost your mind. She shuddered, recalling the hair-raising ride with the narcoleptic taxi driver.
Oh, no, they're taking the flying carpet,
Granny explained.
Sweet! I call shotgun,
Daphne cried, but then quickly controlled herself.
I mean, that will be pleasant.
Then it was Sabrina's turn to roll her eyes. After breakfast, Sabrina, Daphne, Granny Relda, and the odd food-tasting creature, who insisted on coming along as protection, sailed over Fairyport Landing aboard Aladdin's flying carpet. The carpet was just one of a number of magical items the family possessed. Sabrina's first experience riding the enchanted rug had nearly given her a heart attack, but Granny seemed to have more experience steering it, and the trip went without incident. Along the way, Sabrina gazed down at the town. Everything was changing. Once thriving neighborhoods had been abandoned, and many homes were facing the wrecking ball. In their place, odd buildings were erected. Castles surrounded by alligator-infested moats. Mansions made from gingerbread and candy. Mr. Appleby's farm, the site of their first detective case, had been bought and converted into a gigantic chessboard, reminiscent of Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass. The changes made Sabrina uncomfortable. They reminded her that she and her family were the only humans left in town. Sabrina's world hadn't always been so bizarre. Long before magic mirrors, flying carpet rides, and toilet leprechauns, the Grimm sisters had lived normal, quiet lives in New York City. When their parents disappeared, they bounced from one foster family to the next, eventually landing in the home of their real-life grandmother, who lived in a sleepy river town called Fairyport Landing. Sabrina remembered the day she and Daphne came into town by train. Fairyport Landing seemed like the most boring place in the world, but it had a shocking secret. Fairyport Landing was a settlement for fairy tale characters, founded by her great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Wilhelm Grimm, one of the world-famous Brothers Grimm. Sabrina guessed that most kids would love living among their favorite fairy tale characters. Knowing Snow White lived down the street or that the Little Mermaid was swimming in the river might be a dream come true for some, but to Sabrina, it was more like a nightmare. Most of the fairy tale folks, who now called themselves Everafters, despised her family. The root of their hatred lay with Wilhelm, who, with the help of a decrepit old witch named Baba Yaga, constructed a magical boundary around the town to prevent a band of rebel Everafters from attacking nearby communities. The end result was the barrier, an invisible prison that trapped the bad Everafters, as well as the good, in Fairyport Landing forever. Naturally, the townsfolk were bitter, but they failed to realize that Sabrina and her family were stuck in the town, too. The spell would be broken if the Grimms died or abandoned Fairyport Landing. but with a steady stream of outlandish crimes to solve and the rogues' gallery of monsters, lunatics, and evil witches to combat, Wilhelm's descendants weren't going anywhere. Lately, ever after resentment of the Grimms was at an all-time high. Most of the bad feeling was fueled by the town's new mayor, the Queen of Hearts. Mayor Hart and her notorious Sheriff Nottingham had made it all too clear that humans, especially the Grimm family, were not welcome in Fairyport Landing. They raised property taxes so high that they were impossible for most people to pay. Humans were forced to abandon their homes and leave town. When Granny and the family managed to scrape together the money for the tax bill, Hart and Nottingham tried another approach to rid themselves of the Grimms. They arrested the family's protector, Mr. Canis. Canis, who happened to be the big bad wolf, was dragged off to jail as the sheriff, mayor, and dozens more ever-afters, some the family had considered friends, revealed themselves to be members of a shadowy group known as the Scarlet Hand. The Hand wanted nothing short of world domination, and they were also responsible for much of the family's grief. Led by the still mysterious Master, they committed dozens of bizarre crimes, including the kidnapping and spellbinding of Sabrina and Daphne's parents. Staying one step ahead of the Hand was a full-time job, one Sabrina's grandmother had undertaken with the help of Mr. Canis, and now they needed to find a way to get him back.
"There's Main Street!" Daphne shouted above the wind.
Seconds later, the flying carpet gently touched down outside an office building on the edge of town. Once everyone had stepped onto the sidewalk, the rug neatly rolled itself up and Daphne hoisted it onto her shoulder.
"Wait here," the pig-snouted creature said. "I'll scout the neighborhood. It's best to stay out of sight. There could be snipers in the trees."
"I'm sure there are no snipers," Granny started,
but the little monster raced off before she could finish. Sabrina and her sister followed the old woman down Main Street. It was particularly lonely that day. Many of the little shops that lined the street were shuttered and closed. The sidewalks were empty, and the roadway clear of cars. The town's one and only traffic light had burned out. As far as Sabrina knew, Fairyport Landing had never been a bustling center of commerce, but there had been a time not so long ago when its little stores were filled with customers. Now most were abandoned, signs hung in windows declaring, "Emergency liquidations," and, "After 150 years in business, we're closing our doors." Those that weren't shut had a much more ominous sign in their windows, a blood-red handprint, the mark of the Scarlet Hand. One now hung on the door of Old King Cole's restaurant.
"Looks like they got to him, too," Sabrina said, pointing out the sign. "We're running out of places to eat in this town," Daphne grumbled.
Normally, Daphne's single-minded obsession with eating would have made Sabrina smile, but the little girl was making a troubling point. The town was closing its doors to humans and any ever-afters who didn't join the Scarlet Hand. Eventually, the family stopped outside of a small office building with huge picture windows and a manicured lawn.
"What are we doing here?" Sabrina asked. "I thought we were going to the jail."
"I don't think visiting the jail is a good use of our time," Granny said. "Nottingham's been most uncooperative. We haven't seen Mr. Canis in a month, and it doesn't look like things are going to change. I've decided to hire someone who can help us."
"We're going to meet an ever-after, aren't we?" Sabrina said, looking at her sister. She knew that Daphne usually couldn't resist meeting fairy tale characters. She was known to squeal with delight and bite her hand when in the presence of one. "I guess it won't be such a big deal now that you're a grown-up."
"No big deal at all," Daphne said, quite seriously.
When their security guard returned and informed them that they were safe from snipers, the group went inside and climbed the stairs to the third floor of the building. There they found a single door with a sign next to it that read, "The Sherwood Group, Attorneys at Law." Sabrina scanned her memory for the name Sherwood, but nothing came to mind. Granny opened the door to the office and ushered the girls inside. There, they found themselves in the middle of a chaotic battle. Sabrina saw a number of men wearing business suits, but they were acting far from professional. They were sword fighting, arm wrestling, drinking beer from tall ceramic cups, and singing a rambling English tune as loudly as possible. The lyrics seemed to be about fighting or stealing or combinations of both, and once one song was finished, the men immediately broke into another.
"Hello?"
Granny Relda called out, but the men didn't seem to notice her. They kept up with their violent games, laughing at the top of their lungs. They seemed to be having a lot of fun, despite the fact that two of the men were standing on top of a desk, swords in hand, slashing at one another. Each was an expert swordsman, and not a single blow found its mark. What was strangest about the two men was that each was laughing and complimenting the other on their deadly assaults.
"I should get you out of here," the family's bodyguard squeaked. "These men are barbarians."
"We'll be fine," Granny assured the creature. "I'm told that this is how they behave all the time. They're perfectly safe."
Just then, a potted fern flew past them and smashed against a wall. There was a loud cheer that suddenly died when the men noticed how close they had come to harming the family.
"Gentlemen, we have clients,"
a huge man with a dark, untamed beard shouted. He must have been more than 6.5 feet tall, with a chest as wide as a car bumper and hands as big as basketballs. His eyes were deep-set and fierce, giving him a wild expression that was offset by his wide, beaming smile.
"Welcome to the Sherwood Group."
"Welcome!"
the men shouted in unison as they held up their pints of beer.
"I have an appointment with Robin Hood," Granny said.
"Robin Hood?"
the girls cried. Sabrina glanced at her sister, waiting for the little girl to squeal with happiness, but Daphne caught her looking.
"No big deal, huh?" Sabrina asked.
Daphne shook her head, though it was obvious she was struggling to hold in her excitement. One of the sword-fighting men leaped from the desk, thrust his sword in a sheath, and rushed to take Granny's hand. He was a tall, handsome man wearing a dark green pinstriped suit and sporting a red goatee and mustache. His wavy hair hung to his shoulders, framing a broad smile and bushy eyebrows that gave him a mischievous appearance. He looked like the men Sabrina had seen on the covers of romance novels. He kissed Granny on the hand.
"Welcome. I'm Robin Hood, and these miserable louts are my merry men. We're the Sherwood Group, and we've been suing the rich and giving to the poor since 1987.